This is Twit.
Now, we've been hearing about many attacks that happen during events, elections, but hackers are now waiting for events that are more confusing and add a bunch of severity or distractions for their nefarious acts. Now, recently, the North Carolina's Onslow Water and Sewer Authority, or ONWASA, was hit with an advanced attack in the wake of Hurricane Florence. Now, this is a critical water utility in North Carolina, and during the natural disaster, they had to respond to a sophisticated ransomware attack. Now, the attack actually targeted internal computer systems, including servers and personal machines, and actually left them with very little computer capability. Now, customers' data was not compromised, according to officials, but many of their other databases had to be fully recreated. Now, what was the attack? Well, it started with the Emotet, a type of polymorphic malware, which normally is delivered to a victim via an email attachment, like a macro embedded in a document or a PDF. But Emotet is an advanced baking Trojan that mainly works as a downloader for other Trojans. Now, it's among the most expensive and destructive forms of malware to hit the state and local governments. But it actually escalated from there, and several days later, they actually had a RIUC, which is a highly targeted ransomware strain. But fortunately, when that ransomware was detected, employees took systems offline to prevent its spread. Now, to fix the solution, they did have to rebuild some databases. They did have to keep some services all offline for a while. But they're on the way back, and they're coming back from all their downtime. All right, guys. So I want to throw it over to you because I want to talk about – now, Curtis, I want to talk to you first. It seems like common utilities or services for that matter are actually – targeted for these things, but now they're targeting them in the complete like crisis time. Is this something new, or have you seen this in the past?
I don't think this is something completely new. We've seen attacks on them in the past, but as you say, this is new because of when it happened. Interestingly enough, we've been warning, and a lot of officials have been warning about the possibility of a critical infrastructure cyber attack. But we tended to think of it in terms of something like an IoT-based attack that would take down switches or generating capacity. This hit the back office. This hit the economic part of the utility. And it hit them at the worst possible time. I think this actually is a good indicator of what could be the model for this kind of critical infrastructure attack. Because the attackers, well, they feel that the utility, the critical infrastructure company, has no choice. They don't have the time to do full forensics. They don't have the time to let things be shut down while they exercise their "we don't negotiate with terrorists or criminals" philosophy. So from a money-making standpoint, this one could be effective. From a shutting down critical infrastructure, this could be horrific.
Right. Well, again, when something happens in crisis, they have to worry about other things. They're not going to be looking at their systems. So that it makes sense that obviously that hackers are going to do that. They're going to start targeting systems like that. Brian, I want to throw it over to you. What are the normal kind of responses to this type of malware ransomware attack for an organization?
The usual response, pay the ransom. A lot of times that's what the deal is. Now, a larger organization like this may have backups and may be less prone to pay the ransom, although in many cases it takes too long to restore. So the backups aren't as helpful as you might think for ransomware. Now, what's interesting to me here is that this was not an attack that was executed at the time of the crisis, right? That was merely the payoff of a rather long game. This was a very patient attack. The malware was almost certainly downloaded and inserted into this organization's infrastructure long before there was a crisis. And the attackers simply laid in wait for the opportune moment to where they could maximize their return on investment. So that shows that this attacker is although they're using a lot of off-the-shelf typical pieces of malware, they had a long game. They had a plan, and that's should be somewhat troubling to those who are looking at themselves right now and saying, "I don't want to end up in this same kind of headline." What are you doing today to identify insider threats, compromised machines? Because the attack is almost always precursored by something else, right? So the crisis moment was actually just the payoff of a much longer game that was played here, I suspect. And the other thing too that I want to throw in a comment on is that this is common, right? We see DDoS attacks often not for the purpose of taking down a site. It's usually to distract systems administrators, SOC administrators who are looking at systems saying they see all the noise of a DDoS attack, and then perhaps they miss the more targeted attack that's aimed at executing a breach where there's actual data compromise, and that's where the attacker actually gains value, right? There's not a lot of value to taking a site offline unless you ransom them for bringing their site back online. There's too many DDoS scrubbing tools out there. That's not become a really effective ransom anymore. What they're usually doing is they're executing a DDoS attack in order to distract you, sort of a shell game, if you will, to distract you from some other attack that might be targeted at actually compromising data, which it actually does have value on the black market.
Right. You have a good point. I mean, a lot of times you hear about breaches, you know, hey, these hackers have gotten in somehow through some weak link in the network. They've kind of sat dormant for a while. They've maybe kind of escalated their privileges by jumping between nodes or hosts on the network. And then they kind of sit there for a while. So this way they're not detected. And then at some point, like you were saying, in the point of confusion, kind of pounce. And of course, most likely, if the IT group is as good as they are, they most likely will shut down their access at some point, but they've already potentially caused the damage. So I think this is a very interesting pattern, but it seems to be that that's just kind of how it goes as we're talking about malware and ransomware. Now, essentially on a network, you know, each user is potentially the weakest point, right? I mean, that's basically your weakest link in any part of a network is your users. Curtis, I want to throw it over to you. What are organizations doing to actually, you know, obviously users make mistakes. What are they doing to make this easier, to make sure that they are not the weakest link?
Well, I think the easiest thing to do is just get rid of all the users. The networks and applications are much more secure without any users at all. Right. Barring that, most organizations are doing a combination of technology and training. Technology can help somewhat. You do things like you scan all attachments coming in, although, you know, this has gotten much more difficult as the attackers have gotten better with things like using the scripting languages, whether for Office scripting or Microsoft Management Framework scripting. As a way to get past the scans. But the big thing to do is to actually train your users. Let them, you know, just keep hammering them with the fact that you don't go and open unexpected attachments, even if they seem to come from someone you know. Phishing campaigns, spear phishing campaigns are much bigger, much better. And as we've seen, all it takes really is one user to open up an infected attachment and the entire network is effectively under attack.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we can't go to the user as a service model just yet. But Brian, I want to throw it over to you because you've done a lot of work on securing networks. And I'm curious, what do organizations do to help with this model, with this issue?
So number one thing lately is to set up a decryption point, right? So most of our internet traffic is now HTTPS encrypted. So you're looking for something that can decrypt that traffic on the way out, check it, make sure that it is what it says it is. Another thing that I've seen a lot of work done around is actually looking at open holes outbound, right? So these Trojans often have command and control, as well as drop zone communications where they're trying to exfiltrate data or at least talk back to their CNC servers. So we see a lot of times that traffic might be tunneled out over DNS, which is often an open hole. It goes, gets relayed through a trusted server and flows out through the firewall. So I definitely see that as another way. So if there are things that you sort of generically allow out protocols, whether it's DNS or maybe it's FTP or SSH, put inspection tools in place to check for anomalies. And on the point of anomalies, another emerging technology that's becoming very hot and is actually making some hay and actually paying off on the big data trend from a few years ago is we have all this big data around security logs and forensics. We're logging all this data and we're not making much use of it because it's just a mountain of data that's hard to make sense of. User behavior analytics, or user and entity behavior analytics, it's a terrible acronym, UBA or UEBA, is a way of mining that data and detecting anomalous user behavior. So secondary to Curtis's excellent recommendation of educating users to lower the probability of an instance of a compromise of this sort is when a user inevitably does make a mistake, despite our best efforts, is to detect that anomalous behavior using these type of behavioral analytics that are based on machine learning and AI models, analyzing lots of security and infrastructure log data.
Right. I mean, the interesting thing here is most organizations, I mean, the normal line of defense here is to take the system down and restore backups. Curtis, is this something that organizations are aware of? Like, hey, you should be backing up, especially your back office here. I mean, this should be just backed up in a frequency to make sure that if something like this does happen, catastrophic failure, power, malware, whatever, you could just restore the system to the last known good set of data or last known build for an application, and you should be fine. Now, I mean, it sounds like even this organization didn't have this kind of set up. I mean, it shouldn't be organizations be doing this going forward?
Oh, they absolutely should. And a really good backup should be part of, well, not just a data backup plan, but a business continuity plan. And that's going to include everything from data integrity up through telephony, through where you're going to let your people sit if something happens to your office. So it's important to have a real business continuity plan in place. And I was talking this last week to an executive with one of the largest business continuity firms, and they said that they are, in fact, getting more and more inquiries from companies about how a data backup and data continuity plan can help them with issues like ransomware. The consciousness has been raised. What we don't seem to be getting in all cases is that connection between concern and action. That's the critical step that more organizations need to be taking.